PhD, is the Deputy Director for Health, Economics, and Financing within the Global Health Policy and Advocacy Team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Dr. Kress joined the foundation in 2004. Previously, he was Senior Health Economist for the World Bank in the Middle East and North Africa region, where he worked on health projects in Iran, Morocco, and Algeria. Prior to the World Bank, Dr. Kress worked at Abt Associates as Project Director for the Sustainability and Financing of Immunization Project, and as a Regional Coordinator for Africa for the Partnerships for Health Reform Project funded by USAID. Dr. Kress received his PhD in Economics from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and his BA in Economics and French from the University of Montana. So, Dr. Kress, the microphone is yours. Give him a big hand to one of them.
There's actually some seats up here in front. If anyone wants to come up and join at any time, please feel free.
It's no splash zone.
Don't worry. What I want to talk today a little bit about is, I'm just going to say up front, I'm going to be a little provocative. What I really talk about is what I think are some fundamental errors that exist in the global aid effectiveness agenda, and therefore I think we need to rethink it considerably. And so, to kind of cut to the chase, tell them what you're going to tell them what you told them. So, always a good way to start. So, overall, I would say the aid effectiveness agenda has been positive. No one questions that. I think we support many of the tenets of it: country ownership, alignment, harmonization. All these are good things. But it's important to understand that, in a way, there's been a fundamental fundamental misdiagnosis of the patient, really. And firstly, one of the big problems is that the analysis is sort of based on this notion that the aid dollar is the dominant dollar, and the reality is that actually doesn't fit most of the countries where we really have health problems. So there's this sort of a mismatch between this notion of highly aid dependent. In fact, the reality is many of the countries that have the biggest health problems, India, Nigeria, are in fact they have a very low aid dependency. And so part of this has been, part of this diagnosis problem is there's been this perception of aid dollar as, the tail that's wagging the dog, whereas really the aid dollar is extremely marginal. And so rather than viewing this as the thing that's producing the result, you have to see the aid dollar as the thing that's going to influence the result. And that's a fundamental shift, because it means, you're less about trying to get everything organized. You really think about how can the aid dollar have the maximum leverage. And so that's where we really need to think about, I believe, we need to think about an aid effectiveness agenda that's much more focused on the leverage and the results. So that's kind of the point. So, for those of you, I wasn't quite sure how many of you knew or heard about Paris Declaration and all those things. Very useful to have Elizabeth's presentation beforehand to kind of give the time horizon, so I don't have to do that. But essentially the prescription of the problem was this sort of, too many donors, not aligned with supporting national plans, using their own processes, and the notion that being kind of the donor dollar is kind of, if we could only kind of get it, get it coordinated, get it aligned against a national plan, and then we'd have a lot of effect. And that's true. That's absolutely true in a lot of the highly aid-dependent countries, the Rwandas in the world, and et cetera. Absolutely. I was in Rwanda, worked in Rwanda right after the genocide, a year after the genocide. It was chaos and pandemonium. I don't want to tell you all about it. And it was a big effort to try to get donors aligned around it. And so in this kind of world where the aid dollar is sort of seen as dominant and highly independent countries, the standard prescription is we just need to get everyone aligned, coordinate, reduce transactions cost, and then get everyone around the national plan, align all these dollars that are kind of chasing individual programs, get them against one big program, then that will make the results that we want to occur. Thus, I'm glad to see Elizabeth, who's an old friend of mine. Actually, she and I used to work at the World Bank together, so we know one another well. I'm glad to see that she put up this diagram, which many of you have seen. It's a common one. And so that the description was the previous page. This is the solution, right? So we need more ownership, alignment, harmonization, et cetera, ideally get everybody on plan, on budget. Well, why? So then the question is, why might this analysis and prescription be off? And so fundamentally the point is that the reality is in the most of the countries that are critical for MDGs 4, 5, and 6, donor funding is small and marginal, except for a relatively small number. The other big issue is that donor funding, and those of you who've actually, any of you who've ever worked with the financing of health at the sectoral level and at the Ministry of Finance level, or any of you who follow the research around fungibility of aid, which I encourage you to do, know that the reality is that donor funding is extremely fungible, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So this is a graph of under five deaths taken from WHO data 2010. This is from WHOSIS Access 3 days ago. And what you have is this is a listing of the top 30 countries by under five deaths. And basically, these 30 countries account for 85% of global child deaths. So India, Nigeria, DRC, Pakistan, China, Ethiopia, you know, sort of the top ones. Again, most of you who work in global health should be broadly familiar with these data. Now, if the next thing we want to show is, okay, well, great, this is where the problem is, these countries. Now the question is, what do I know about financing of health in those countries? And what you see is, yeah, there are basically five countries where you've got external financing is more than 40% of the total health spend. So the ones that are asterisks are sort of the five countries. You've got maybe another three or so where it's below 30% and somewhat significant. But so, you know, the reality is that there's sort of five, maybe generously six out of the 30, maybe generously eight or nine out of the 30, where you have a relatively higher level of donor dependency and where external financing is large. But the broad number, and particularly if you look at the ones that are sort of closest to the y-axis, right, which is where most of the burden lies, where most of the child deaths lie, those countries, in fact, India, Nigeria are classic examples. You know, those are countries where, well, it's, you know, India, it's well under 1% of total health spend. In Nigeria, it's like 2 or 3 at max. So the notion, the big point here is that when you look at the countries by burden and you look at the source of external financing, most of the places that we care about are, frankly, not that aid dependent. And it's much more a function of domestic spending, public out of the national treasury, and private, particularly out of pocket. So the next issue to suggest something about the problems with aid effectiveness is really this issue of fungibility. So I'm going to give you, this is from a study that was published by Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, published in The Lancet in about a year and a half ago, which, you know, showed how aid is very fungible. And, you know, fungibility means you give a dollar to the health sector, give to a dollar to the government in health. And the reality is what happens is that the Ministry of Finance will sometimes, because you're giving them an additional dollar, they'll allocate less to the health sector. And so what you see here is, you know, sort of a pre-situation is the government spending a dollar of its own, and then you give, a donor comes along and gives an additional dollar to the government to spend on health. Well, what ends up happening is that the amount that actually gets spent, it's not $2, it's not the $1 the government had before, then the $1 in donor aid. In fact, it's anywhere from 86 cents, which is more than perfect substitution, to about $1.57, which is some degree of fungibility. So, you know, the notion that donor financing is kind of always additional, again, I hope no one has that belief, because, it, again, if everyone's worked at the sectoral level, you'd realize that's not often the case. And anyway, so the point here is that because of the issues of fungibility, there's even real limits to the effectiveness of donor aid, or we should be thinking about, again, not so much aid dollar as the dominant driver, but the aid dollar as an influencer. And so So we really need to think to shift this, to shift in focus, thinking about aid dollar as the thing that's driving the result to the thing that's influencing the result. And we should also really recognize a key message for those of you who haven't read the World Health Report 2010. I think it's the best thing that WHO has done since probably the 2000 World Health Report, probably even better than the 2000 World Health Report. So if you haven't read it, read the executive summary, read the document. I can't commend it enough. I think it's the best thing that WHO has done in ages. On sort of, and it's one of the key things it's really talking about is some of these issues around resource allocation and particularly issues around the effectiveness of spending in the health sector, which tends to be quite low. So what I thought wanted to do is, again, to show that why we need to shift from sort of seeing the aid dollar as the dominant driver to seeing really the aid dollar as a marginal dollar that we should be thinking about as a way to influence the larger spending and the results agenda. Is because, in fact, when you look at domestic spending, we see a lot of inefficiencies. So one of the big things is inefficiency in terms of this domestic spend, which I'm asserting is really the big source of financing. It's not the aid dollar. The aid dollar is marginal and influential, but not determinant. And why should we care about the domestic spending is because what we see, and these are some data from what a World Bank calls a public expenditure tracking survey, which tries to show how do the resources get down to the service delivery level. And as again, those of you who've worked in the health sector in developing countries who know a lot of this, which is that the money doesn't oftentimes get to where it's supposed to go. And so what this sort of suggests is that there was, you know, of the 60% of funding allocated to the region, 18% got there, and then 1% was actually received by the PHC. So, again, those of you, the World Bank has a PETS site. You can see lots of other studies from lots of other countries. But, again, those of you who may be familiar with working at the developing country level, this should probably all be quite familiar. You know, another big issue here is this was some from data that was done during the Tanzania THIP, which was another kind of quite an interesting project. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. Swiss Tropical Institute, Don DeSavigny, and others were associated with it. But, you know, showing how the resource allocation priorities were askew. You know, looking at Morogoro District in Tanzania, high malaria burden, but very few resources allocated towards it. They were able to reallocate resources and have a very big impact on child mortality. And another reason why we need to care about these large pots of domestic financing for health and CRA dollar as a way to influence that domestic spend is because, frankly, a lot of that domestic spend is very inefficient. And so here's some data that I actually collected myself in Nigeria earlier this year as part of a review, a midterm review of a DFID government of Norway routine immunization, maternal, neonatal, and child health project, actually in Yobe and Zamfara, and looking at budget execution rates. And so here you have some data from Yobe State, which basically their health budget, they executed 11% of their health budget. So that's, you know, so, you know, they had about, you know, 4 billion naira. They spent about 496 million naira. So it's an execution rate of around 11%. So those kinds of situations, you say 11% of your budget you're actually executing, not hard to see that your health services are not going to be terribly well financed. Zamfara did better with about 53%. And then the other big issue was ghost workers. So their big thing here is, and again, it's very well reflected in the World Health Report 2010, which I will again highly recommend. If you haven't read it, you work in international global health, you need to read it. It's this issue of ghost workers. So they found 350 in Yobe on salary, but there was only about 100 who were actually in the facilities working. So I'm just going to summarize real quickly. So the main point here is that I would assert that we've made a strategic error in a lot of our work on aid effectiveness, is that we have tended to overemphasize this sort of spaghetti diagram, the aid dollar as frankly the problem, and the aid dollar as determinant, and in fact we've failed to recognize that in most of the countries where we're working, aid is small. Aid is tiny. And the reality is that what we should care about the aid dollar is how is it influencing this much larger source of larger sources of financing, the government spend, private out-of-pocket spending, and healthcare. That's where the game is going to be won, and where we're going to have real results or not.
Thank you. Questions for Dan? Yes, Len, go ahead.
This one's provocative. Just go back to that graph which listed all 30 countries. You see a lot of them, maybe half of them, are places we don't like. They're very bad in governance. They have wars. Their allocation of food resources to meet human needs are not serious, and there's no way to speak of because they don't meet the Paris principles kind of concept of a functional government that sets priorities that we want to harmonize with. How do you address those issues in your thinking?
So I guess I would assert there's probably two countries on that list that fall in that category. I think, yeah. Myanmar and Somalia. You know, Yemen has a very active program of assistance, USAID and the World Bank are there. Most everyone else, you know, I don't know of any, even, you know, Sudan is obviously South Sudan, for those of you who know, it's a big focus for USAID assistance. And so I think that's true, but I'm not actually sure that that's true except for maybe a couple of those countries. I think, again, I guess I would assert that for those countries that are highly aid dependent, that the idea of getting alignment and coordination is important. So I guess I'm not trying to say that everything about the Paris Declaration is wrong at all. I think that the notion of country ownership is absolutely critical. The notion that we need to have strong national health plans that focus on results is absolutely critical. I think that the notion, what I'm sort of arguing is that the notion somehow that getting everyone simply online on plan and on budget can actually make a big difference, I think we have to stop kidding ourselves.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
So when you were talking about, you know, $8 replacing domestic spending on health spending in some of the sub-Saharan African countries, is that necessarily a bad thing in that, have you looked at where that money went? Were they able to make investments in agriculture or in something else? And I don't know the answer to that question, so I'm actually just genuinely wondering.
That's a great question, and the subject of a lot of debate and a lot of passion. So let me say that there are some who view that it may be completely rational for a minister of finance to say, look, I'm going to get all this extra money for the health sector, therefore my education sector is underfunded, I'm going to give them a little bit extra. And that may be optimal for them. There are some, there's many people in the health community who feel like this is a dollar for health. There, we expect that the government should be making equal, if not an additional effort, because we're giving them an additional dollar. So, you know, I can't, the work that's been done on fungibility of aid, and there's quite a volume of literature on the subject, it hasn't been able to tease out the effect that you're describing, but it is a subject of quite a bit of passionate debate.
Yes, please.
Of And your choice, governmental and non-governmental, comes from external aid or just governmental?
So in the aid fungibility statistic that I showed, that's only aid that goes to the state, to the public sector. In the data in this slide here, this is essentially only money that from donors that goes to the public sector. And so any kind of money that goes to the non-state sector, would be counted differently.
Yes, please.
One of the questions I was concerned about when you were showing the slide about how much money is actually getting down to, 18% and 1%, I've worked in numerous countries that are certainly that have a reputation of being corrupt, but I'd be curious to know that money that's getting lost, what's happening in between going from point A to point B? Is it really getting lost to corruption, or are there other things? And in talking about the effectiveness, is there something we can do to maybe help with training or better ways to spend that money that is being donated to or given to the government?
It's a great question, and I can't answer in the specific case of Chad. I can't answer based on my own experience working at the country sector, which is we shouldn't jump to the conclusion that most of it's corruption. Actually, in my experience, frankly, relatively little, if very, very little of it is. Actually, most of it is an inability to manage a procurement on time. In an ability to actually execute purchasing, and delays in program implementation. Those are the things that oftentimes cause projects to under disperse. Again, those of you who are worked in development will have known all of this.
Then there should be more focus than giving aid money, working with countries. So this is a better way to spend your aid money, so it's not getting lost to all the inefficiencies. I mean, if we're talking about aid effectiveness.
I would couldn't agree more.
Okay. One more question. I think somebody raised a hand over there. Yes, please.
So if the U.S. government was to embrace everything that you put out there, how should the U.S. approach these countries in terms of restructuring our aid programs? I mean, what would be the conditionalities that you would put the U.S. aid to get them to address some of these inefficiencies?
That's a great question, and I'm somewhat remiss to answer directly just because I wouldn't want to necessarily be in a position of trying to provide advice to the USG. I have a lot of good friends. My former boss is Raj Shah, so I don't want to be kind of Monday morning quarterbacking what he and others are trying to do. I think to my mind, the big thing you really need to do again is to sort of think about how can we leverage the money that's there, and just recognizing that the aid dollar isn't the thing that's trying to produce the result. It's not a question of your aid dollar, my aid dollar, and getting those two aid dollars together, and that's going to solve the problem. The problem is your aid dollar, my aid dollar, and then the 99 other dollars that are being spent by governments and private individuals. And our $2 are trying to influence the 99 or 98 other dollars. And so, that's the context, I think, that it's important to kind of realize. And what that sort of does is suggest that thinking about the ability of the funds that the government and private individuals are putting on the table is quite critical. So understanding issues around, like these state-level financing issues, I think in northern Nigeria are a big focus for us right now. We're working a lot in northern Nigeria. We're with USAID, with DFID, with Norway. And we're starting to take a much closer look at some of these issues around ability to execute on budget, the ability of resources to get down to this, to the periphery, because it's really hard to have strong community-based primary and preventative care programs if no money is ever getting down to it. People aren't getting paid, drugs aren't there, facilities aren't rehabilitated. And so that's a big focus for what we're trying to do right now.
Thank you very much. Let's give Dad a big hand. Thank you, Dan.